From Luke's Gospel, chapter 23. One of the criminals who were hanged railed at him, saying, "Are you not the Christ? Save yourself and us." But the other rebuked him, saying, "Do you not fear God, since you are under the same sentence of condemnation? And we indeed justly, for we are receiving the due rewards of our deeds. But this man has done nothing wrong." And he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingly power." And he said to him, "Truly I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise." Crucifixion took 3+ hours, probably much longer than that. And Jesus said 7 things from the cross, as it's recorded in the Gospels, presumably with a world to save, death to defeat, and salvation to assure. He was a little busy for conversation. 4 of the things he said were in effect prayers directed to God. On one other instance, he told his executioners that he was thirsty. And in 2 cases, he spoke directly to people who were there. He looked at the beloved disciple, we believe perhaps John, the author of the 4th Gospel, and gave him the obligation and the responsibility and the honor, really, to care for his mother, to take care of business after he left and while Mary was still alive. And then these words to the thief on the cross. In response to the thief's request that he be remembered, Jesus says, "Today you'll be with me in paradise." The church has made something of that. It's a text that's been the subject of a great deal of scrutiny, theological reflection, some speculation. It leads to the idea that at the moment of our own death, salvation begins. Today, you'll be with me in paradise. How that works out? The details are unknown. Jesus doesn't say. Again, he was a man of few words at that point in his life. But as a church and as a people, we've managed to take the wonder and the mystery out of it and put it into the realm, the limited realm, of human logic and understanding. Because the next question humans tend to ask is, well, what about the other guy? What happened to him? Bringing to that question the logic of the transactional world we live in, we simply say, well, he didn't ask, so he must have gone straight to hell. What do you think? Well, there's no evidence for that. Human logic limits the outcome, perhaps, to that. But we don't know. It's really the same logic that has led some, in some cases very famously, to focus on the notion of the deathbed confession. The Emperor Constantine was so concerned about this, so concerned about his eternal soul, that he demanded he not be baptized until just before the moment of his death, so that presumably nothing could go wrong after the baptism, and he would wind up today in paradise. I know if I tried that trick, the baptism would happen and there'd be one sneaky impure thought that would get in there and screw the whole thing up before I die. And it's beginning to sound a little absurd, is it not? This whole notion of, well, what happens to unbaptized children or unbaptized anybody? Well, they didn't ask for it. The church didn't do it. They must not be saved. Well, how silly does that get? It puts the burden of salvation on the clergy and on the church, which is in the church's interests. But there's no benefit, or there's no evidence for it, I should say, in the scriptural witness. And again, we begin to sound sort of silly with this logic. Tracts and testimonies and all of those things that regard us in some way or ask us to regard ourselves in some way as hell-bent unless we do something else, ultimately suggests that what Jesus did wasn't quite enough. And until we say pretty please, it doesn't work. Again, that seems a little silly. What could we possibly add to what Jesus has already done? What could possibly be the one thing that we could do or that we would have to do to make it work? Nothing. An image I would suggest that's a little more helpful. Every day, the sun rises. Every day is a chance at new life. And I've given you, in the bulletin, a sunrise table. This will tell you the moment that the sun rises every single day between now and next Easter. And I want you to imagine that the sun rises just for you, as the sun rose on that first Easter, just for you. There are three personal moments where Jesus encounters disciples post-resurrection in the light of a new day. One is to doubting Thomas, and this is sort of an exasperated encounter where Jesus says, okay, you asked, do you see it now? Do you get it? Do I have to do anything else? Another is to Mary Magdalene at sunrise, where Jesus meets her and calls her by name. And the other is to Peter, with the disciples gathered. Jesus says to Peter, Simon Peter, do you love me? It's an open question, since the last time Simon Peter appeared in the New Testament, he was denying that he knew Jesus three times. So he says, of course I love you. And Jesus knows the answer. He said, well, on the basis of that, then, feed my lambs. Nothing Jesus says to any of his disciples post-resurrection has anything to do with salvation. He is, in effect, simply saying, it's a new day, and you have two jobs. One is to tell the story, and the other is to be of use. Go tell my disciples, Jesus says to Mary Magdalene, that I have risen. To Peter, he says, feed my lambs. That's it. It has nothing to do with a testimonial, a confession, or the afterlife that's been taken care of. It's the here and now that we move into to honor Easter. So I've given you the sunrise table so that on days when it's hard to do that, on days when it's hard to tell the story or be of use, you know at what time to look at the eastern sky and see the promise of resurrection. There are days that will lead to sleepless nights between now and next Easter, where we will be haunted by things we have failed to do. We will be guilt-ridden over things that we have done unto other people. We will be grief-stricken by things that have happened to us that we could not control. And the night will fall and fall hard. And especially when that happens, when you can't imagine the next day being a day where you could tell the story or be of use, set your alarm for the time of the sunrise. And face the eastern sky. And even if it's raining, even if it's in the middle of a thunderstorm at dawn, the light will break through. And you may not see the full sun every day, but you will experience the light. And the message will make sense, perhaps. And maybe you can even hear the echo of Jesus' words to the thief on the cross. Today is a day especially for you. A foretaste of paradise. Look at that sunrise. That sun rose today for you, Neil. Happy Wednesday, Wanda. Have a good Friday, Lily. It's for you that the sun rises every single day with a new chance to tell the story, to be of use. For the Lord is risen. He is risen indeed. And happy Easter to all of us. Amen.